the radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Rick, speaking of all good things beginning with a V, a few years ago I dislocated my shoulder. Worst pain ever. While in the E, man, I've never done that. I've never dislocated anything like that, but I saw a guy do it once when I was in high school. Guy was playing tennis or football or some crap. Dislocated it. The worst part was not hearing him scream when he dislocated it. The worst part was seeing him run off to the nurse's office and his arm just sort of flopping around like a trout on a riverbank. Anyway, while in the ER, I was given Valium through an IV. Your description of not caring is right on. I watched them push my arm back into its socket. Didn't care. Didn't feel a thing. Thank God for drugs. Thank God indeed, Ann. Thank God indeed. Thank God for Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The Hawaiian earthquake, 6.7, not quite as big as the Northridge one. But there are pictures of cereal all over the floor in various stores. The ceiling of Killer Tacos fell down, but nobody was injured since it was closed at the time. But most importantly, how did Don Ho do?
Knocked out communications, no electricity for about 13 hours.
All right, now, I know that we say this a lot on the show, but I swear to God he was dead. I swear to holy... I think that's some sort of zombie Don Ho, because I swear to Christ we had the story like 3 years ago. Don Ho, bubbles, tiny bubbles, right?
Yeah.
Dead! He's goddamn dead! Don Ho is dead! The dead live! This is clearly... The quake has obviously created some sort of race of post-mortem, post-apocalyptic, champagne bubbly music singing Hawaiian zombies. Run! For your very lives.
Don Ho said this is the strongest quake he's felt in the many years he has lived in Hawaii.
Rains. I've gone through a couple of those in Hawaii, but this was the biggest I felt.
Rains. All right, there you go.
He's 76 and alive.
Okay, fine. Fine. Whatever you say.
And the only thing in this profile is exactly what you just said. Tiny bubbles.
That's it, man. And you know, here's the thing about Don Ho.
Is that a song? Was he a singer?
It is. Well,
he was a one-hit wonder.
He was a one-hit wonder, but the thing is, I don't even know the whole song. All I know is enough of the song to sort of reference it as a DJ. That's it. Don Ho and Tiny Bubbles, that's one of those things that I only know enough so that I can look like I know a lot. Oh, yeah, Don Ho, Tiny Bubbles guy. That's it, man. It's not even an index card in my brain. It's like a post-it. And not a 3x5. It's like a 1x2-inch post-it in my head. All I know is the part of the song that goes, Bubbles... Tiny bubbles. But that might even be wrong. I might be thinking of something else there altogether. So there you go.
But he is the Wayne Newton of Hawaii.
Fantastic. It's what everybody aspires to be. That reminds me of this. I went to school with a girl whose last name was Ho. That's got to be a lot of fun. Less so now even than then, I would imagine. All right. But Don Ho escaped more or less unscathed because of his zombie-like ability to regenerate body parts. Okay.
And we have just learned Hawaii's big island is sinking, and it'll be gone in 80 million years.
See while you can, kids.
Meanwhile, you know who's hopping mad?
Wait, hold on.
And about what?
Hopping mad. It's not Linda McCartney's, or Paul McCartney's wife.
Nope. The subject is North Korea, and the person who's upset is... John Kerry.
They're living in a complete fantasy with respect to the foreign policy they put in place. It is a failure.
Uh-huh. Okay. Who? John Kerry. Who? All right. There you go. And he's doing what now? Is he even... Okay, this is the thing I don't
even
know.
Well, he is not...
Is he even still a senator?
Yep.
He is, right? Yeah. Okay.
You don't get voted out of office in Massachusetts for anything.
But I mean, it's like... it doesn't matter. He could be drowning people left and right. Mm-hmm. So, he's just sort of there, just sort of lurking around, just doing...
Well, he was on Fox News Sunday.
Haunting the halls like some sort of political lamprey. Lifeless and odorless and shapeless and colorless, doing a whole lot of nothing. All right, there you go.
And he wants everyone to know that he is not ruling out another run for the White House.
Oh, great, lucky
us. One of the reasons that North Korea can misbehave the way it is today is because the United States has lost its... its leverage, lost its credibility, and doesn't have the capacity to be able to bring countries together in the way that it used to.
It's over! Give it up!
I hate hearing his voice. It's like after you've broken up with somebody. You know what? You know, you let me down. You let us all down.
It's all, again, when you go home and you check your messages and all the...
I realized I left the toaster oven in the basement. Like, oh, I never wanted to hear from you again!
I know!
Oh, you were gone!
It brings up bad memories.
And, you were really right, by the way, when you say that he let everyone down and disappointed him. There's a whole generation of people that's just going to rue the day that guy was ever born.
Yeah, it's all nice and good that he still has opinions about things, but where were you?
Seriously, where was opinion having guy, in 2004? God, you know, I was just thinking about that last night, actually. I was thinking about John Kerry for some weird reason. I forget why. Oh, you know what it is? It's because this is a weird change. This is how my brain works. Because I was walking around the house, and it's like VH1 or something was on in the background, and they had some news program about some documentary thing, and Eminem was on there. And they were playing part of the real, the My Name is Slim Shady. And I was thinking about that aborted Kerry watch team we had at one point that Todd the Corpse made. That was a whole lot of My Name is
John Kerry
that he'd made. And I was thinking about, this is the thing that I will never forgive either myself or John Kerry for, that I never got to do the Kerry watch. And I labored so long, I had so many failed attempts, I had so many swings and misses at creating a Kerry watch, it never came together. And then, you know, when I finally came up with what it was the night of the election. The night, I swear to God, I was sitting at home watching the results on television, sitting and watching Chris Matthews on CNBC, a tally of the votes as they were coming in, and as I was watching the returns, I had it suddenly hit me like an inspiration. It suddenly hit me. I was blinded like Saul on the road to Damascus, and I realized what the Kerry watch theme needed to be. But then it was all pointless, and the next day there was no reason, and I'm not going to bring it back now. So the only reason for John Kerry to run would be for me to use that. And the whole thing is too depressing. Can you imagine how depressing that would be if he ran? What if he ran and lost again? Then if you run and lose a second time, then you just have to go and incinerate yourself. You know what I mean? Because and this is the thing. This is the weird, surrealist thing about this. The Kerry is talking about. Did he just say here that he wanted to run again?
Nobody pays any attention to him.
One of the reasons that North Korea can misbehave the way it is today is because the United States has lost its leverage, lost its credibility, and doesn't have the capacity to be able to bring countries together in the way that it used to.
All right. So I read something on the Drudge Report this morning saying that Kerry wants to run again.
He does.
So we've got Kerry wanting to run again, Gore clearly wanting to run again, because that's what this, and we're going to be giving tickets away for this later on.
That's a great slideshow. Kerry should get a slideshow.
Kerry ought to get, you know, somebody better and more charismatic to pretend to be him. And then you've got Hillary. So it's just the weirdest, most surreal crop of candidates. The whole thing is just freaking bizarre.
Then we have Tony Snow trying to dispel rumors that the U.S. wants to get rid of the Iraqi government.
There was a rumor that there were going to be attempts to replace him if certain things didn't happen in 2 months. And the president said, the rumors are not true. We support you.
Uh-huh. Just leave the gates open. We don't have to do anything. Turn off the alarm system and leave the gates open.
Seriously, because the Iraqi government basically consists of one small guy sitting in a closet somewhere in a basement with a single solitary flickering light bulb above his head. I mean, that's it.
And a candy machine.
That's what it is. It's just like Milton having been moved to deep storage. It's basically just a guy sitting there on a dial-up connection, like, you know, refreshing occasionally to see, you know, to see when he's about to be bombed. That's it, man. There you go.
On to B.
All right.
Tony Snow says the Iraqis are going to get the job done.
And the job is...
Eventually, the ones who are going to have to finish the job are the Iraqis themselves, but certainly they're going to be doing it in concert with coalition forces.
Whatever that means.
I have no idea. I have no idea what the job is.
Supporters with Tennessee's defense of marriage referendum are bringing heavy hitter James Dobson for a big Stand for the Family rally. The spokesman Gary Sheenberger says values need to be taken into consideration when casting ballots.
What you hold dear on issues that are important to you are just as vital as some of those other pocketbook issues or issues about national defense, those kind of things. So we're trying to let them know that the issues that they hold dear, the things that they really care about, are also things they should keep in mind when they step into the polling place.
Dr. James Dobson is the head of Focus on the Family, by the way, and when he's not busy burning evil rock and roll albums, he's writing tremendously naive and inadvertently hilarious books for children. I know this because my parents bought me all of his books when I was growing up, and I've talked about this before, that my my adolescence, my burgeoning pubescence, it unfortunately coincided with the apex of my mom's religious zealotry. And so my mom decided that rather than having, you know, pesky schools or science classes or, you know, my parents themselves teach me about things, that they would have Dr. James Dobson teach me about everything. His books are sold exclusively at Christian and Bible bookstores. They really, they're the sort of thing that if you were to read them now, especially under the aid of some sort of powerful narcotic and sedative, they would be even more hilarious than they typically are. The one that my mom bought for me, I wish I still had it. It was called Preparing for Adolescence. And it starts, if I can find it at home, I'll bring it in. It's great. It started with, let's say you're driving down a road. The road is called the Road of Life. Up ahead, you see a sign saying Adultville, 5 miles. The car is you. And it was a whole lot of how, like, you are the car, and the life is the road, and Adultville is up ahead. And not a lot of how you ever engage in self-congress in an impure manner, you will be poked with a stick in the fires of hell for all eternity. And that's basically it. It's more or less like a 3-page book. It's a lot of like, you're the car, life is the road, don't touch yourself. That's it. There you go. And then like, rinse, repeat. And that, for like 150 pages.
See, I had the religious one, except I had Salty the Singing Songbook. And we go on car trips, we would learn all about Jesus through Salty the Singing Songbook.
And Salty is who?
And this big giant blue book who had a bunch of children following him around.
Why is his name Salty?
I don't know.
I'm very confused by this whole story, and that's not just the volume talking. Okay, so
no, I didn't. Yeah, you had your car on the road. I had Salty.
No, that's what it was, and you were driving down the Road of Life, and it was the exit was marked Adultville ahead.
I think it was spelled with a like P.S. like Psalms, but Salty.
Salty. Okay. Because kids are really able to grasp the subtlety of that. By the way, the other thing I remember, this is they had these line drawings. There was the obligatory Where Do Babies Come From section. And they had these line drawings of men and women that, I mean, they all looked like, what's it, your friend Kara? Except it was just they were without any parts at all. I mean, the weird thing is the male and female drawing, they were essentially the same. They looked exactly the same, except that the woman had slightly longer hair. And the only thing they said about this is that babies, God, I wish I could find this book to bring in, is that babies resulted from a, I swear to God, this is what they called it. Babies resulted from a tingly kind of hug that men and women sometimes gave each other at certain times in their relationship. So there you go. A tingly kind of hug. And a tingly kind of hug sounds like something that...
Static electricity.
a tingly kind of hug sounds like something that a William Castle creature in a bad zip-up rubber suit would give you in a 1950s horror movie. Look out, the tingly hugger! You know, and it's like, and then you'd go for popcorn in the lobby.
They're Salty.
All right.
On the computer.
Oh, you found Salty?
Yeah. Yes.
It is Salty with a P-S.
It is.
And Salty is a book?
He has all kinds of songs. Maybe we could play one of his songs.
He looks like a milk carton.
You know, what's astonishing is when you think back to the amount of brain power in your head that is still devoted to remembering church hymns,
mm-hmm.
children's religious songs. Lara's like this, my wife, because she grew up Mormon. And the Mormons are really canny about the whole thing. The Mormons are very crafty because typical Christianity, and we're all kind of Roman Catholics in this room, but Roman Catholics sort of have this, Microsoft/Linux attitude where everything is open source, where, you know, like, if you can't come up with your own song, just take a Beethoven, just take Ode to Joy and give it new lyrics, doesn't matter. And they all kind of share psalms. The Mormons have, like, their own proprietary set of weird hymns that nobody else has ever heard, that other religions don't use. So, but it is astounding the amount of memory in your head. It's like when you go through your computer and you realize, what is this? Well, it's that Jewel discography that I downloaded years ago because it seemed really fascinating. In your head is all kind. I mean, commercial jingles, TV themes, and then a bunch of like Salty the Happy Bible Guy, you know. So, all right,
singing songbook.
Here's Tim Riley.
To be married means to be outnumbered. Married couples whose numbers have been declining for decades now, as in proportion as American households, have finally slipped into a minority. Now, only 49.7%. Or 55.2 million of the nation's households are made up of married couples with or without children. So that is just shy of a majority. We have some other facts there relating to that. Some of the biggest gains in unmarried couples were reported in unexpected places like the Midwest. The number of households made up of male partners rose 77% since 2000.
Steve Waters, director of Focus on the Family, said the trend of fewer married couples is more a reflection of delayed marriage and rejecting it. It does show that a lot of people are experimenting with alternatives before they get there.
Okay.
Married couples have not been a majority of households headed by adults since the 1970s. And among those, 25 to 34 years old. Americans age 35 to 64, married couples still make up the majority of households.
I will tell you this, right? That, we've talked about this before. That the only reason that Laura and I really, I mean, nothing, you know, I love my wife, blah, 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 all of that stuff. But the only reason I think that we finally decided to get married, and that's the irony of my marriage, is that really, when you look at it, you know, in a roundabout sort of way, the Bush administration and the Bush family were responsible for me getting married because it was because of Terry Schiavo. I remember that guy tried, Terry Schiavo, I remember her husband trying to unplug her for like 10 years, and he was married. They were married. They were still husband and wife, and the state wouldn't let him unplug her. And so, I mean, that just terrified me because you know, domestic partnership does not do nearly as much for one as you would think it does. And I remember just finding out, I remember having this discussion with my now in-laws and them telling Laura flatly that we, because the Mormons have this whole thing about never unplugging life support because I don't want to sit and dog on the Mormons, but they have a lot of very seemingly odd beliefs, even for religion, because they're opposed to cremation, for one thing, because apparently they feel like you need to be all whole when the Savior gets back, because all the king's horses and all the king's men and the heavenly Father and all his power can't put you back together again. So apparently if you're burned up in a little box, like that's how you spend all of eternity. God just has to lug you around in a satchel on his waist because he's not able to piece you back together. So they're big believers in preserving the body. So their whole thing was that if Laura was ever in a vegetative state on life support, that they would never turn, they would just leave it running forever and ever and ever, which we want no part of. So that's good. I mean, that's the whole reason we had to do it. But I mean, other than that, there really be, you know, that and our continued desire to experiment with alternative lifestyles. So, let's break here. We'll come back. We got more around the corner. Coming up later on, Clyde Lewis will be here. We have seen a radio correspondent, Gary Baumgarten, who is at CBGB's for their closing night. Jim Roop coming up as well. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay there. We are back after this.
Will happen real soon. Build the an ark, big enough for all. Yourself, your family, one pair each of animals. Two by two, four by four, obeying instructions.
Fantastic. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick, this is Todd the Corpse. Now that you are forced to wear a series of hats to shield everyone from your hideous, scabby scalp, I think it's a perfect time for you to start rocking the do-rag. Continue with this. Just a thought. That's not going to happen. And we got to do the...
Is that good for your hair? I mean, to be wearing hats over it?
Well, there's sort of a fine line one has to walk between what's good for my hair and what's good for those around me. You know.
I'm not suggesting you air that thing out by any means, but should we get you like something?
Thank you. Well, here's the thing, because I got a meeting I have to go through tomorrow. I was saying this, it's the best and worst timing for this whole thing, because the regional vice president is here, and I mean, it's not like this hat that I'm wearing is like the worst thing ever, but it does just make me. I do more or less just look like a KUFO DJ. You know what I mean? Just got the big baseball cap on. So I'd like to find some, and plus it goes with nothing else that I'm wearing. So I am going to have to find some quasi-respectable hat to wear tomorrow. We were over at, we went to Kink on Thursday, because Queensrÿche was doing this little acoustic set, which actually ended up being really cool, and I was sort of reflexively trying to be hip and cool and make fun of it or whatever on Thursday, and kind of poking fun at the fact that, whatever, that, it, you know, that Queensrÿche is, you know, still around a tour, but it was actually really cool. It was a really great thing to see. But we go over to Kink, and they're doing this tiny little acoustic set for, like, I don't know, like 30 people. It's a very private thing that they, like that Social Distortion thing we went to, and where they tape it and they play it back, and the Kink DJ, whose name escapes me, I'm sure he's a nice guy. The King guy who was interviewing, he was doing this. It was a lot of like, lady, and for you, I mean, Queensrÿche, you understand, they're a metal band. I mean, it's not metal in the sense of like today's metal, but I mean, they're very hard rock band. Unplugged said or not, they're a progressive hard rock band. And they just sort of, I guess they didn't kind of fit in with KUFO or whatever. And so it ended up being at Kink, and where they're just as, it's just as much of a mismatch at Kink as anywhere else. And so the Kink DJ gets up and he's going, and now we're pleased to present Queensrÿche singing there. And it was just a whole lot of like skin crawling, like a lot of mispronouncing of things and so forth. And, you know, touring behind their album, The Mind Crimes, and just it's all bad. But then like the DJ, the Kink DJ, and of course, you know, he's got the Kangol on, and he's like, you know, it's like a baby boomer age.
I didn't think people actually wore that.
It's a baby boomer age white man wearing a backward turn Kangol.
Was it like lime green?
No, it was like gray, but it was just and then he had like the gold necklace thing on, and it was a whole lot of, and you sort of judge yourself by what you don't want to look like sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes it's not a question of what do I want to wear. Sometimes it's a question of just whittling away all of the choices that you don't wish to use. And that was one of it. But I have no better idea. So sometimes that after the show today, I'll get you some lunch, and we'll get
you a hat.
All right. Let's see. Well, let's do this. Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show our good friend Clyde Lewis. Hello, sir.
How you doing?
I'm okay, brother. What's up in the world of all things spooky?
A lot of weird stuff going on. First of all, last week at Dante's, I'm sorry, you got me in the middle of eating my salad. Last week we were at Dante's, and we were talking about the abyss, and we were talking about the djinn, and we were talking about the homunculus. We were talking about all those weird things, and a number of people were emailing me.
Isn't a homunculus like a thing that you have to get removed by a doctor?
No.
What am I thinking of?
No, the homunculus is a creature, a being. It's almost like the alien being that you look at. It's got big eyes, and it's gray, and it's white, or it's really small. It's a really creepy creature that was created by Aleister Crowley.
Also
revealed that Barbara Bush is the daughter of Aleister Crowley, which I thought was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah.
We did that last week. Yeah. And, but one of the things, like, I was getting all these weird dreams and everything about strangeness happening after people had seen the djinn footage. And what's really odd is that, you remember that plane crash that happened in New York on 10-11?
Last Thursday.
Corey Lytle?
Right, yeah.
Well, the situation was really weird with that is that I was drinking a drink, and my meal ticket was on that drink. And when it turned upside down, I spilled it at about 3:33 in the afternoon. And 3:33, of course, is a half of 666. It's really bizarre stuff. Anyway,
okay.
What had happened is I noticed that the date, 10-11-06, when turned upside down, is 9-11-01. And so a plane went into a building on 10-11-06, just like planes went into buildings in New York on 9-11-01. So it's really kind of bizarre the way that all happened. I'm going to show how that came about at the lounge tonight, but I'm also going to talk about movies with Aaron Duran and Scott Daly from Film Fever.
Well, they're going to be doing something. It's like a cursed film thing, right?
Yeah, we're doing cursed films.
Okay, but are you sure that a homunculus isn't like a, like a scabby thing that you have to get taken off?
No.
What am I thinking of?
You're a carbuncle.
Carbuncle. That's it. Not a homunculus.
Not a homunculus, but a carbuncle.
I don't know. I don't know from carbunculus.
Anyway. But,
yeah.
So we're going to talk about cursed films tonight. It's really going to be a creepy show because we're going to talk about Rosemary's Baby and the connection to the Manson family and also Sharon Tate's murder.
I'm unclear about this. How is it that you deduce that Barbara Bush is, what is it, the daughter of Aleister Crowley?
Because Barbara Bush's mother used to be a concubine of Aleister Crowley's.
Okay.
Yeah. And
a concubine is not like
word.
A concubine is not like
concubine.
A carbuncle.
So it's carbunculus.
Anyway. concubinous.
I've heard a lot from a lot of other movies. I didn't know that Rosemary's Baby was cursed.
No, that's totally correct. And Poltergeist. Don't forget Poltergeist.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about Poltergeist too, but we're going to touch on that. We're going to talk about Rosemary's Baby.
What happened with that one? Give us a little teaser. Can you give us a little tease?
Can you give us a taste?
A taste? Well, Rosemary's Baby was filmed at the Dakota. The Dakota apartment.
In New York.
Murdered.
Right.
John Lennon was murdered there. What's really interesting about that is that Roman Polanski, the guy who was the director of that movie, his wife Sharon Tate was murdered by Charles Manson's family. Charles Manson was inspired by John Lennon's music to kill. And it's kind of we're going to get more into it in depth, but it's really creepy the way it all fits together. And also a number of anagrams in Rosemary's Baby, which are really scary about Satan and everything else. We're also going to talk about The Exorcist and also The Omen and some of the strange things that happened while they were filming The Omen.
And is this all taking place inside the Ground Zero Lounge tonight?
Oh yes, because we're going to have visuals. We're going to show a lot of clips from the movies. We're going to show a little trick we're going to do with a Scrabble board, which is even more creepier than a Ouija board. There's all kinds of real weird and strange stuff that we're going to do tonight. And of course, Scott and Aaron are going to be there to give us commentary because they did research on this as well. So it's going to be a joint effort between filmfever.org and also Ground Zero to present for you Hexed Films. And it's going to be a really scary show tonight.
Very cool. Tonight at Dante's.
At 8 o'clock. And I want to also let people know that the Rose and the Raindrop is going to be shutting down soon.
Oh, no.
And so what we're going to be doing is on Halloween night, we're going to be organizing a seance and an investigation into the crematory underneath the bar. For those of you that don't know, it used to be a funeral home way back at the turn of the century.
Right.
So we're going to do an investigation into the basement area, which is a tunnel that goes down below Grand Avenue and Martin Luther King Boulevard. And there's actually an oven down there where they used to cremate people.
Really? It's still there?
Yeah, it's still there. I went down and investigated with Sadie Gregg, and it was really a...
Oh, that's completely... That's totally creepy.
So we're going to do that for Halloween. So if you've got the guts and if you've got the... And if you can do it, if your girlfriends think you're strong, you know, guys can show up. If girlfriends are stronger than the guys, they can show up, and we're going to go in. And then upstairs, there's an area where we're all going to meet. We're going to have a seance upstairs. It's going to be really nice. That's going to be done by lottery only. So
as we get closer to Halloween, we'll have to have you on the show talk about the about creepy Portland places.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that. We'll talk about creepy Portland places. There's a lot of cool things that are going to be going on. And coming up on Halloween, the Halloween show at Dante's the Monday before, Rex Church from the Church of Satan.
Oh, that guy creeps me out, man. That guy, seriously.
The guy with the horns?
The guy with the spikes coming out of his forehead.
Oh, he's awesome. I met him. He has a really cool dog.
No, he's not a bad guy. I'm just saying. There's something. It's like when Dee Snider from Twisted Sister had his teeth filed into points in the 80s. There's something wrong with a guy who decides to do that.
We're going to have him on, and he's going to talk about how he's invented a machine that creates evil. And it's going to be really a scary show.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff going on for Halloween.
I have no response to that.
I'm totally going to go.
You're going to go? Yeah, come tonight, Sarah. It's going to be a really scary show.
I don't know.
I mean, if you ask anybody who comes to the shows lately, the shows have been over the top.
How does one
I remember, I used to work with you. You used to scare the crap out of me every night. You would show me all...
How do you even market a machine that creates evil? I'd like to see that. How does one even go about pitching that to investors?
Yeah, but Rex is telling me that he's created it. He says someone's got to do it, so he's doing it. And we're going to talk about his creation. It's like creating a Frankenstein's monster. It's going to be amazing.
Why can't he just make something that makes bread or something? Why does it have to be evil?
Like a all-in-one bread and
evil.
And
liquid evil?
Grinder. I think you can buy those things.
Does it cut evil whisper thin?
Yeah, it cuts evil whisper thin, yes.
Does it all? Okay, thank you. All right, the Evil-matic. All right, thank you. Clyde Lewis, ladies and gentlemen.
So pay attention because we're... And last night, I just want to put a plug in. We debuted Burger Cake. So the other night we debuted Burger King.
Oh.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Am I still high? Because this conversation, I
knew all about Burger King. I invented a new meal. Remember Mugga Pizza was unveiled at your house? Well, I unveiled Burger King at Aaron's house.
Here's what's going on in this conversation, because again, I'm still a little drugged from this weekend.
All right.
Barbara Bush is the daughter of Aleister Crowley.
Yes.
You have a friend who's created a machine that creates evil.
Right.
You're going to be unveiling Burger Cake.
I've already unveiled Burger Cake. I unveiled it at a Evil Dead 2 party with Film Fever, and we did drunken commentary about Evil Dead.
So did you make a big burger the size of a cake?
I don't understand.
Burger Cake is a pound and a half of burger goodness, and it is all
and it's a cake.
In a huge bun with pepper bacon and cheese and And it's just amazing. You slice it like you would a cake, and you serve it up, and it's really good.
Where did you find a giant hamburger bun?
So this is a... I don't understand.
Oh,
is this
well,
a cake shaped like a hamburger, or a hamburger shaped like a cake?
Hamburger shaped like
it's a cake. It's a hamburger the size of a cake.
Why?
And you can serve it at birthday parties, weddings, bar mitzvahs, whatever, you know. Even when you're creating a huge machine of evil, you can also serve it at the machine evil thing.
Clyde, you must tell me where you got the big bun.
Fred Meyer.
Okay, we have to end this phone call now because this is too much. It's freaking me out. This is too many things going on.
The women I'm with here at lunch, too, are laughing because they think I'm crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with them on that. All right.
With them on that. That's good.
Tonight, Clyde Lewis, the right. Grand Zero Lounge tonight at Dante's. Thank you, my friend.
Hey, we'll see you there, everybody.
There you go. Thank
Take
you.
Care.
There you go.
He's awesome.
Made a machine that creates evil. All right, it's 503-733. Scotty, who is this on to? Should I be taking any? The call screening thing is just blank today. I'm getting a hold of nothing up there. All right, it's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. Just a few seconds here. We'll be rejoined by Tim Riley from the Ministry of Truth. Rick, says Todd the Corpse, growing up, our church did Salty the Singing Songbook plays, and we had a giant foam rubber book costume for whoever played Salty.
Awesome.
It was this is a great story because it combines crazy church stuff with mascots. It was literally a giant book with a face hole cut out of the book's spine.
It was really weird.
Imagine a masseuse table with the face cut out but standing upright. The best part was that the costume was shared between a series of churches, and it kept being passed around and passed around and passed around for years and never cleaned. It literally smelled salty. All right, so there you go.
Yeah, I never got a lot of visual on Salty because it was always when we were in car trips. We'd just sing along to the songs.
Do you have the Salty songs?
No,
you own them anywhere?
Well, you can play them. I found some on the internet. Well,
really?
My parents, yeah, my mom still has them.
Fantastic.
But you should play one.
All right, if I can find them all, I'll play them. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Madonna has been granted an interim adoption of a Malawian baby she's trying to adopt. This happened after a plane arrived and took the child away. He left this morning after being issued a passport and a travel visa. A group of churches in that country have tried to stop. They say it's unlawful because Madonna hasn't lived there. But what can you do?
And so this is from where?
Malawi.
And where is that?
Someplace in Africa. One of those countries that changes its name every week.
I'm American, so I have no idea where it is. All right. Well, that's fine. All right, there you go. So
the child is from the Home of Hope Orphan Care Center. Oh, it's close to Zambia. Does that help?
Is Madonna just sort of some Veruca Salt type, or she just decided, Mommy, I want a Malawi baby. Go get me one. Angelina has one. And so then they just kind of...
It is the latest fashion accessory.
Swoop in and pick one up. She'll keep it in the... she can keep it in the purse right next to the miniature toy poodle. All right.
This is Attention Sarah Dill.
Attention Sarah Dill. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me just get the appropriate sound effect here. Attention Sarah Dillon. All right.
Oh.
All right, we're ready.
Well, breastfeeding offers many benefits, but boosting your child's IQ is not one of them, says a UK study of almost 5,500 American children and their mothers. Breastfed babies may be smarter, but it's only because their mothers are smarter, suggesting the study, which found that mothers are more intelligent, were more than likely to breastfeed their babies.
It is the natural way, Sarah.
Mothers who breastfeed their infants are more likely to be older, have more education, and provide a more stimulating home environment for the babies.
Yeah.
The link between breastfeeding and intelligence was first suggested in 1929. While breastfeeding doesn't boost the baby's IQ, it is important for the healthy growth and development of infants and offers many benefits to both mother and child.
That's what I'm saying. Now, I don't have it in front of me, but somebody sent me an article that actually had the scientific term. Because we had two things that are sort of intertwining, is it? Two things that are sort of being subsumed in one another. And one of them is Sarah Dillon's aversion to any and all discussion about breastfeeding. And the second one is this passing observation that Sarah made some time ago, which has now started to consume a disproportionate amount of the energy and mental the wherewithal of this program, which is the fact that Sarah has a friend named Kara who has no nipples. And which we thought was going to be, it was like an isolated phenomenon. But now I'm thinking no. I'm thinking it's like, would you get a neighbor that has like six toes? Or you get some David Bowie guy that's got like one blue eye and one green eye or whatever? I have had two now different people from inside CBS email, and neither of them wish to be identified, but two people from inside CBS, two different people, who say that they have come into a close contact with women who have no nipples. And so somebody went so far as to send me, and it was like a scientific breakout. It is a well-known enough phenomenon that there is actually a name for it. There's a whole scientific description to it, and we will get to that as time goes on. Just be listening. We'll talk about that next time. And then we're going to do some more stuff here, but then next time we got to talk about this goddamn weird story I got. Sneathan sent me this story about the University of Wisconsin, which we're going to get to. It's the weirdest story, and it's weird. It's weird not so much because of what's in the story, but because of what's not in the story. And I know that sounds a little bizarre, but we'll get to that next hour. Here's more from Tim Riley.
Double Snuff Watch.
Here's your Double Snuff Watch from Monday.
Anybody know who Freddie Fender is?
Freddie Fender. My mom had the biggest crush on Freddie Fender. Much to my dad's dismay. My dad was always irritated by that for some reason. Freddie Fender, God, the one they're going to talk about is Wasted Days and Wasted Nights, right, in the story? Mm-hmm. The other one was, God, was it Till the Next Teardrop Falls? Wasn't that him?
Yes.
Yeah. Sarah, do you know who Freddie Fender is?
Nope.
Is that his real name? Do we know if that's...
His real name is Baldemira J. Herta.
Okay.
Born in the poor Rio Grande Valley border town of San Benito, Texas. In the mid-50s, he cooked up the name Freddie Fender to honor his Fender guitar and further his crossover appeal. It wasn't him, of course. It was a record company. He didn't do it willingly. He was first attracted to music through the rhythm and blues he heard on migrant farms in the Midwest and Texas. His father died when he was 7, so Mr. Fender's family began traveling around the country to find work. After a stint in the military, Mr. Fender settled in San Benito and played rockabilly and rhythm and blues. He also fronted for a black band in Texas back when some Texans wouldn't speak to blacks in public. Mr. Fender began blending rhythm and blues with the accordion, banjo, and sublime horns of his youth. In 1959, he recorded Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. It didn't become a hit till the 70s, I believe.
Jesus.
And Holy One, which original smashes in Louisiana and Texas.
And Freddie Fender's one of those guys that could never become a country star now. It would never work because it was like this weird sort of Tex-Mex style, and it had all this Latin influence to it. And he had this weird, I don't know about music to describe it. I don't know if it's a falsetto or whatever, but this weird sort of quavering, very high pitched. And he had this song called Till the Next or I'll Be There Till the Next Teardrop Falls. And it was like this weird kind of like Los Lobos meets Kermit the Frog kind of a thing. And people either really dug that guy or they really despised him. My dad just loathed him and his music. My mom played it constantly. And it was one of those, I didn't think he was dead. He's like Charlie Pride. He's one of those guys that I didn't think he was dead. I just had forgotten he existed at all. So there you go. Freddie Fender dead.
Part 2, the animator who designed TV cartoons such as The Flintstones, Barney Rubble, and Yogi Bear is dead at the age of 94. Ed Benedict joined the groundbreaking Hanna-Barbera television animation studio in the late 50s. He was quite an interesting fellow for sure, says his longtime friend David Sheldon. He was the main character designer for all the early Hanna-Barbera characters, including Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, Creek Draw McGraw, for the Flintstones series about a modern Stone Age family. Benedict designed Caveman Fred and Barney and their wives and the children, as well as an array of Stone Age houses and gadgets, including feet-powered cars.
Now, it should be noted, by the way, that Scotty J. created, because he thought that they would be hilarious, an entire array of Hanna-Barbera sound effects for me to use during the snuff watch. So, I was unclear about how those might play out. Okay, let's try this one again. So, Tim Riley, why don't you just read, like, the opening headline again? It's take it from there, and we'll augment it with some Hanna-Barbera sound effects.
The Flintstones animator is dead at 94.
Okay, I don't know whether that's hilarious or not. All right, let's try that again. Let's try like the next line.
The animator who designed TV cartoon characters such as Fred Flintstone, Barney Rubble, and Yogi Bear is dead at the age of 94.
Is that the same one?
I think it's clearly the same one. Okay, this one's probably different. Let's try one more here.
Well, he was quite an interesting fellow, for sure, said the dead man's friend.
Okay, there you go. Well, better in theory than execution, I think. But thank you, Scotty J. I appreciate that. You know what I think about all the time? Not all the time, but I do think about this a lot. I think about sound effects from Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Because think about the... Think about those sound effects and how universally known they are. I mean, and you would never confuse those with anything. You, if I played you any of these, like the... I mean, all of those are readily identifiable as Hanna-Barbera sound effects. Don't you ever wonder what those were made by? You know what I mean? Like, the one that always gets me is the... Like that way, which is the sound of... Everybody knows what that is. Sarah, what is the sound? What's happening there?
Someone's, like, building up speed, and then they run off.
They're running in place, and then they're running away. We could... Right there. That's like when Adam Ant or something or Grape Ape or whoever has to like run off and take care of something. I don't have a large enough library of Hanna-Barbera sound effects here to do it, but you could get anybody off the streets. This is where I talk about American culture and how there's certain things that if you come here from another country or another culture, no matter how well you study, no matter how hard you learn, there's certain things that you're just never going to know because they are sort of woven into your cultural DNA. Hanna-Barbera sound effects are one of those things. You could get anybody who grew up in America, put them in a room, and you could play those sound effects, and they could tell you, A, that they were Hanna-Barbera, and B, what was presumably taking place on the screen. Like, I don't have the sound effect with me, but we all know the sound of Fred slapping his feet on the ground and making the car roar off. We all know that sound. So this goes in. I'm creating a whole file in my head of small subjects that need to be covered in one documentary that covers, you know, the sort of the unusual origins of ordinary things. Like, who creates porn music? Like, who are those people in the frames when you buy the picture frame at Payless? Like, who creates elevator music? I want to know where these Hanna-Barbera sound effects came from, because they don't even sound like real noise. In other words, whether it's made by a guy like... Whatever, like a guy, hitting a log with a stick or whatever it is. Whatever originally created these noises, I no longer think of them as that. They exist solely and separately as their own thing. And I'm fascinated by those and where they came from.
But the technique for a lot of these came from the old days of radio when they created their own sound effects. And a lot of the people who worked in these cartoons worked in the old days of radio where they used sound effects, as well as the people who did the voices.
Absolutely. Yeah. Have you seen Radio Days, the Woody Allen film?
Yes.
Oh, there's that great sequence, exactly what you're talking about, that great sequence where they're talking about the Masked Avenger, whoever it is, and they're showing the guys creating the radio drama, and the guy goes to break a window, and they're breaking a pane of glass.
Right. And when that brand of radio died, they all went into cartoons. And they all did it into the 80s, you know, some of those voice actors.
And, same thing with Foley artists, too, which is the guys who create the sound effects for motion pictures after the fact. So it's just fascinating stuff. It really is. Here's the other thing, and we'll break, and then we'll come back with Gary Baumgarten here. Here's the other thing I think about. I think about, and MASH is always the show that comes to mind here, I think about those people who were on laugh tracks of those 70s shows. And A, the fact that everybody you hear on those laugh tracks is dead by now. You listen to an episode of MASH, everybody laughing, dead. Goddamn dead as a doornail. I think, who are those people? And am I the only one that does this? Am I the only one, and this is not the drugs talking, am I the only one that's watched MASH enough that I recognize sometimes certain laughs? I will actually recognize specific laughs on a laugh track, and I wonder, who is that guy?
Friends is the same way. They just play the same laugh track over and over and over again. It gets distracting to me sometimes.
And you'll spot it, you're like, I know that laugh!
Mm-hmm.
And I long to track down like the guy behind a specific laugh and see what his deal is. I don't think I'm the only one. This is money in the bank, I'm telling you.
But if you watch the old I Love Lucy shows and you hear that loud cackle, that's Lucy's mother in the front row.
Really?
And they use that one over and over again.
Fantastic. The more you know, knowing is half the battle. Back after this with Gary Baumgarten, more of the Rick Emerson Show. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere.